we are back with episode 735 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I think Will Wheaton needs to let his agent know that he is capable of playing something other than skeevy corporate overlords.
And I don't know about you, but I think that if I were a kid cast in any type of 80s style story, I'd just try to call my agent immediately. Maybe get a different job, just saying. Yeah, we have quite a lot of discussion here waiting for us, since we have 2 weeks worth of material based on our Dragon Con hiatus, or inspired hiatus, so to speak.
Yes.
But before we talk about any of that, Edmund.
We have so much to talk about and so little time to do it in. We're just going to blurt it all out and spoil you silly if you haven't seen the episode.
That's right. That's right. And we are going to be starting with the episodes from a couple weeks ago where we left off before we went on our break. And we have 6 episodes in this list, and they range anywhere from a dead solid average 7 up to an 8.25. So fairly a good week, I guess you could say. Nothing below average, which is good. But we are going to start with that show that is at the bottom of the list, as we usually do. And that is going to be Fear the Walking Dead, Season 2, Episode 9, Los Muertos. After the fall of the compound, Madison, Strand, and others forge a tenuous path forward. Meanwhile, Nick is recruited for a perilous assignment. And this came in, as I said, at a dead average 7. Edmund, your thoughts on this episode?
Well, I guess my major takeaway with the Fear of the Walking Dead at the moment is I really feel like it's in this strange situation where it's starting to mirror certain of the sort of tropes of the original Walking Dead. Certainly in the, you know, as they're getting back into this season after the break, the way that they've split everybody up and now they are sort of just following these different plot tracks is feeling reminiscent of a season or two ago when they kind of did that with the main cast. It's not really grabbing me. I'm starting to feel like this, you know, with the general Walking Dead concept, we are getting perilously close to that point where it's like, no, we feel like we've been here before. Okay. You're coming up with slight variations, we are down in Mexico and, dealing with that different sort of the Day of the Dead culture, which we were doing at the compound, but now as they're getting away from that losing the boat and winding up in this resort, it's still feeling very static and just okay, we're getting our people into a different in the case of this hotel, I mean, it was feeling very much like, you know, oh yes, you know, a different puzzle box for them to think it, you know, the, think this could be the place that saves them until the complications come up and then they have to fight their way out of this. So I guess my main takeaway is I feel like it was taking a step back from some of the interesting cultural stuff that they were starting to bring up at the mid-season break, and now it's just becoming just a different locale for Survive the Zombie Apocalypse.
Yeah, it does seem like that's where they're going with this. I mean, this is the episode that had the infamous scenes where the zombies were dropping from the sky.
Yes.
Because they were falling off of the balconies, which to a degree, I think that's a really funny moment. It's certainly memorable. It's something we haven't seen before. I think the logic of it kind of falls apart immediately,
mm-hmm.
because you wonder to yourself, at least, how did they not fall before?
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe they were drawn out because of the noise downstairs, because Maddie and Strand were being completely stupid.
Right. Yes.
But at the same time, just from random movement, the ones that were in the rooms should have and could have gotten out at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really make sense. It seems improbable that people would not have found their way there before and kind of stirred up trouble. So yeah, it was different, but it was not very strong at the end of the day. And the scenes between Maddie and Strand seem to go on forever, which I really don't understand. Why they kind of have that pacing problem still. But yeah, what else can I really say about this one?
Yeah, and also, I mean, in terms of that issue of yes, Madison and Strand, you know, just basically deciding to get drunk in the bar, and just in general, I mean, you know, the this group has been through enough that winding up kind of managing to get everybody separated from each other, it really felt like doing it just for the sake of, you know, yes, so now we can get them all in perilous situations and cut to scenes from next week, and you have to wonder how are they getting out of it, or which of them are getting out of it, or probably all of them, because they're still on the lead credits, but this just felt like it was not necessarily advancing the story hardly at all, just kind of slipping into standard Walking Dead perilous situations,
and not even particularly interesting ones. So that's where we fall into the problem of where they're at. They gave us a lot to work with at the mid-season finale. Mm-hmm. It seemed like they were really setting some stuff up, and now it's just not paying off.
No.
But we'll get into that a little bit more. Turning our attention then to the top show for the week. Coming in at an average of 8.25, we have Mr. Robot, Season 2, Episode 8, Successor. F Society releases the video, and Darlene acts on an old desire. Yes, and I really was not expecting, after the big reveal at the end of the previous episode, for us to see an episode completely without Elliot.
Yeah, but at the same time, I didn't mind them taking that sharp turn away. But that's because refocusing back on F Society, or what remains of F Society, especially with Elliot and Mr. Robot, and Mr. Robot not around to help them along, I rather liked getting that look into how the people who actually did initiate all this, how they're handling it, or in this case not handling it that well, and sort of the way the second season has been cruising along, really focusing very tightly on that core central group, and peripherally with the ways that the hack has sort of manifested and permeated out into society, but really keeping the focus on what it's meant to these core characters. I think it's the sort of shift that with other shows I probably would have been bemoaning it and saying, I want to see what's happening out in the society, and sort of compared to some of our complaints about first season of Fear the Walking Dead, you know, when we thought it was going to be more about how society's institutions dealt with this growing apocalypse, with Mr. Robot, where we are really just still seeing this little bits and pieces of how it's affecting the wider world, but keeping our focus on how difficult it is trying to keep this movement, this hacker collective, alive in a world that is getting increasingly fragmented, and then in their case here also having the world they had taken over suddenly collapse back in on them in ways that just lead to even more complications and unexpected deaths.
Mm-hmm. I do like where they are, what they are doing at this point later in the season, where I think earlier on they weren't showing so much of the effects of the hacker apocalypse, so to speak. And now they're getting into it a lot more. That intrigues me. That's the kind of stuff that I wanted to see almost from the beginning, was how is society fragmenting after the market collapse? It's you know, a world that is trying to hang on to its old traditions and its old ways, but is fundamentally altered. And we're starting to see how maybe the facade of normalcy or normalcy is starting to fall apart as time goes on. You know, that initial attempt to keep things static is just not working. And meanwhile, there is a growing desperation for the FBI to, and for the corporate masterminds to find and eliminate these elements of F society and everything else. And that's where we start feeling the walls closing in at this point. But yeah, I think that this was another strong episode. All right, that means that we can get into the shows in the middle of the pack. And we are going to start off with a show that actually was in a tie for first place. The Last Ship, Season 3, Episode 11, Legacy. A final showdown pits Chandler against his formidable enemy. Elsewhere, Kara joins forces with someone who can help her with her mission. And like I said, this one came in also at an 8.25, but for various reasons, it came in second instead of first. I really wasn't expecting them to resolve the war with Peng so quickly. But it does seem to make sense that if they are really paying a lot more attention right now to what is happening in the U.S.
To the coup, that, yes.
To the coup, that's where the story needs to turn. And since that's really what this whole season was about in the end, it does make sense that you get rid of the faux big bad before you actually turn your attention to the real one.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And I did like them bringing it down to the confrontation between I'm forgetting character names, but the Japanese pirate played by the wonderful Mr. Sonata, and the final confrontation did need to be between him and Peng, having that whole Asian storyline resolve itself through them, And then turn the focus back to extraordinarily brutal little takedown that happened for the rest of the U.S. military, honestly, we'd brought it up earlier in the week, but this was absolutely the episode where with that taken care of, and then them having to turn their focus back to the U.S. Deal with this corruption at the heart of the government was where all of our talk about parallels to Crusade and the way that show was supposed to go. I mean, just it just became, you know, if they're not aware, it's an extraordinary coincidence, as we've said about some other comparisons in the past. But certainly the whole idea of the fact that we have a disease, we found the cure, we had a complication to getting the cure out, that seems to have now been resolved. So now the cure can really get out there, but we've got this big black stinking corrupt mess to take care of back home, which we are now going to do. So yeah, at the very least, The Last Ship is at least a version of how Crusade might have happened.
Mm, exactly. And a little bit more on that shortly.
Yeah.
Next on the list is Killjoy, Season 2, Episode 9, Johnny Be Good. Dutch ends up being seized by an angry mob as a result of Potter's plan to free Old Town from Jailco's rule. And this one came in at an average of 8. And I think that this was a bit of a messy episode for a penultimate episode.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like it was a little disorganized until we get to the very end.
Oh yeah, yeah. I got what they were trying to do in terms of the classic, have a cold open with a situation that seems horrific and over the top, and you know, and then do the classic you know, he has cut back 24 hours or 48 hours to how they actually wound up in this bizarre horrific situation. This was not one of the stellar examples of doing that in terms of sort of keeping the story straight. At the same time, once they started resolving some of the those things they'd set up, they have done such a good job of establishing these characters and establishing this team, and this whole sort of dual track of the Sixes and Klein on one side, and what's been going on with the Rack, and then Johnny and Potter's going off on their own and falling in love, and how much was that getting in the way of his judgment, obviously came to a huge head in this episode, and in ways that this show is very good at giving us exciting action, at the same time giving us these very strong and effective character moments, even beyond the fact that it's major character deaths and people who we and the characters involved did not want to see go, but it's still been done in ways that I found very effective and very moving, it's been the hallmark of Michelle Avretta, starting with Lost Girl and continuing into this show, that there is the sort of over the top wisecracking kick-ass aspect of it, but at the same time doing that work of developing these characters and getting you to care about them, so that when major crushing events happen, actually feel it.
Mm. And boy, did you, that one hit hard.
Yeah,
that one, yeah, was a real stab to the gut, to put it mildly.
Yes.
Next on the list, we have Stranger Things, Season 1, Episode 7, The Bathtub. Eleven has trouble reaching Will. Lucas issues an ominous warning, and Nancy and Jonathan show the police footage from Jonathan's camera. And this is the penultimate episode for Stranger Things, Season 1. I give this one an 8. I think that it really does everything that it needed to do to set up the big confrontation at the end. Kind of wrapping some of the plot points and plot threads together with character threads and really pointing the way towards how they're going to have to resolve everything. So another solid entry for that series. And finally, we have Dark Matter Season 2, Episode 9, Going Out Fighting. In a desperate hope to save their ailing leader, the crew attempt to pull off a dangerous mission inside the headquarters of Dwarf Star Technologies. And this one came in at an average of 7.5. The focus given to the episode in terms of Two and her plight was pretty impressive, but I still feel like that required a lot of that emotional connection that you were just talking about with Killjoys.
Mm-hmm.
That just has not been there for Dark Matter.
No.
So without that connection, Two being in mortal danger wasn't as compelling as it could have been.
Yeah.
To me, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do find it just sort of indicative. This whole thing that to this day they are still referring to them just by the numbers, and then I still have trouble attaching the number to the right person. I get there, but the fact that it doesn't just sort of automatically pop into my head is not a good sign. I'm always happy to see Will Wheaton on my large or small screen. But it is getting a little ridiculous now that we now have his appearances on Dark Matter. We have his appearance on Leverage. We have his appearance on Powers, which, yes, I know, not a lot of people have seen that, although we certainly have. Even arguably, his version of Will Wheaton on Big Bang Theory, where it's like, guys, you know, let Will Wheaton play something other than, you know, these, you know, these sort of, you know, sleazy corporate techie types. You know, maybe it's some, you know, it's almost like he's trying to make up for Wesley, you know, except he's now getting typed in a completely different direction.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good point. It does seem like he is constantly getting cast in this role.
Yeah.
Almost to the point where it is really just overdone, to mm-hmm. say the least. Mm-hmm. I think it's just, maybe something that contributed to this particular episode in terms of some of the disappointments. But it wasn't a terrible episode. It's just that the impact that I think the writers were hoping that it would have was blunted by the lack of connection with the characters, as you said. Mm-hmm. I still also have that problem of trying to keep straight who is who.
Yeah.
So when they're referring to 2 or 5 or 3 or whatever, it just, I don't know who they're talking about. It's just not natural for me to think of people that way. For whatever reason, it doesn't click.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I mean, as you were mentioning it, I mean, it also doesn't help when the solution to her nanite problem is one that, I basically called the moment, Mr. Wheaton unleashed the newer version, you know, and it was like, yes, okay, defeat him, take his blood, pump it into her, you know, so, you know, it's like I was going through a video game level.
Exactly. Yeah. It was kind of writing by numbers in certain respects. All right. Next, we have our second week's worth of shows to start going through. And yeah, it's a similar list.
It is indeed.
In many ways. It's exactly the same shows, all 6 episodes, with very slight changes in the order.
Yes.
Episodes fared a little bit better this week. The overall average for shows was a little higher, but I have to say that it wasn't a huge difference. So it's more a matter of extent at this point. So that being said, we can go ahead and jump into the bottom show for the week. And once again, it is Fear the Walking Dead, Season 2, Episode 10, Do Not Disturb. Mm-hmm. Travis struggles to connect with Chris while searching for shelter. Meanwhile, Alicia meets a lonely woman with a bloody past. And this one came in at an average of 7.25, so a little bit of a bump up. I'm still going to focus a little bit on the negative here.
Mm-hmm.
Travis and Chris.
Yeah.
And their long, long road to a minor character point for Chris.
Yes.
That was obvious that it was coming.
Yes.
And included campfire talks in the middle of, like, an open field.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of the zombie apocalypse, I might add.
Yes.
Yeah. I was waiting for them to start singing. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well. I mean, I think it was that was especially highlighted by when the scary guys show up, and it's like, you know, oh yes, and they actually put up defenses and, you know, cans and things. And it was like, oh yeah, I remember. You know, seeing that sort of thing done in the past, but at the same time, it was just pointing out that and your two main characters who haven't quite reached that point, unlike the rest of us. Yeah, did not inspire a lot of confidence in the characters.
No, sadly it did not.
And also, I mean, just the whole thing, you know, of yes, leading up to the point that you know yes, okay, Chris is more than ready to start killing people. It's like, guys, you've been establishing that for, you know, like the last, you know, for most of this season, you know, and actually, if I remember right, starting at the end of last season.
Yeah, unfortunately. It does seem that way. They're just taking their sweet time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, I mean, much as I, you know, like seeing people like Brenda Strong show up on things, but then taking this whole new little subplot of of the wedding party gone horribly wrong, using that to introduce this new character. Now, one thing I actually wasn't even fully keying on until after the episode was, it was this question of, okay, so this whole herding that she's been doing in these other parts of the hotel, are we meant to infer that that is the reason why the bodies started falling in the previous episode?
See, if that the, is,
exactly, yeah, you know, but that, because it did bother me in the previous episode, you touched on it a little bit. I figured I'd wait until now, why did all these zombies suddenly start falling from the balconies, threatening the pool area and the bar, et cetera. I guess it either wasn't intended, or they were drawing the connections so poorly that it wasn't until after I'd finished watching this episode that it suddenly that suddenly occurred to me. It's like, oh, okay, but as you say, even if that was the intention, it's pretty strange and silly, and just the whole setup with this resort of oh yes, okay, I've been barricading myself against the wedding party who I tried to kill basically all of this time, and only now that now this other part, these other people have shown up, now everything comes to a head. I just found it to be a very strange and ludicrous situation, and this is one of those cases where the more I'm talking about it, I'm thinking I might have given it below a 7, but because it's really not holding together for me.
No, and I'm just going to say once again that everything leading up into the mid-season finale was actually improving the show in some major ways, and it feels like the episodes since they came back have been a just disappointment, just mm-hmm. that it's regressing.
I
don't know what else to say about this. I'm just hoping that they can turn things around sooner rather than later. All right, next on the list, we are going to move up to our number one show for the week, our top show, which is once again Mr. Robot season 2 episode 9 in it 5. Angela wants more from Ecor than they want to give, and Elliot and Darlene seek answers. Boy, that's nice and evasive.
Yes.
This one coming in at an average of 8.5. Actually, there were a lot of episodes that came in at 8.5, but this one still, in my opinion, rises to the top.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yes. It's just a matter of degrees, people. To me, you've got Elliot back into the narrative. Mm-hmm. Now we start seeing the seeds for the finale for the season coming together. F Society is falling apart both externally and internally. The pressure is really on both on everybody, especially on Angela right now. Just we start seeing all these fractures starting to emerge, and that theme throughout the entire season of the false sense of control mm-hmm. that characters have had, slowly but surely, actually in a much accelerated sense right now, falling apart. The illusion of control is definitely breaking. And so, yeah, this season is definitely rushing towards its close pretty nicely here. I think there's only 3 episodes after this. So, yeah, this is a really good material.
Yeah, and certainly, they did take that episode away from Elliot to show to F Society, but getting the details, actually filling in the details of what had happened during his little prison break, use it in the break in the needing a rest from the world scenario, not the breakout of. I found that quite intriguing. But especially in terms of Elliot having so deliberately tried to get himself inside, thinking that was the way he could, as he had been showing us earlier in the season, impose some order in this world, or pretend that he was imposing some order on his world. I thought was particularly well done. At the same time, I mean, you're seeing that as filling in the details on Elliot's coping mechanism, and then Darlene. still trying her best to throw her weight around and, you know, and have her way with E-Corp, and seeing that continuing to spiral out of control, is setting things up rather nicely for how all this might come together, or more likely just completely spiral out of control in a week or two or three.
Mm. Yes. I believe that that's exactly what we're going to see. All right. That means that we can see what happened with some of these other episodes that were tied with Mr. Robot for the top spot. And the first one on the list here is Killjoys, Season 2, Episode 10, How to Kill Friends and Influence People.
Oh, how nice.
The Killjoys and an old enemy join forces in a desperate attempt to thwart Level 6's plans for the Quad when Season 2 ends. And I really like the way that all these plot points came together and all these character threads came together here at the very end of this finale. And I'm so happy because they leave it on a really nice cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. Not really cliffhanger, just a...
Oh, yeah. No. This is a perfect example of resolve the threads that you've developed in the season. Bring it to a nice, a nice close, give Klein a suitably dramatic death. Yes, this is the sort of universe where maybe there's some way of that not being the case, but I think this is one of those where this is going to stick, just because of its symbolism was too perfect. At the same time, use all of those plot developments to finally, this feels like one of those two season introductions where, now we have finally set up all the major things we want to set up. And that just leads us into the next big bad, you are going to have to do battle with next season.
That's right. And the fact that the character of the next big bad is played by the same actress who plays Dutch, mm-hmm. doesn't hurt at all.
Nope.
I know a lot of people who are going to be very happy to see twice as much of that actress, yes. presumably. Let's see. Next on the list, we have the season finale of Stranger Things, Season 1, Episode 8, The Upside Down. Dr. Brenner takes Hopper and Joyce in for questioning as the boys wait in the gym with Eleven and Nancy and Jonathan prepare to fight. Yes, a lot of stuff comes together in this final episode of the season. Quite frankly, it's a pretty good, pitch-perfect one as far as staying consistent with the rest of the season to date. It gives a lot of satisfying resolutions, and it also sets up a much bigger second season, as we talked about just a couple episodes ago. It's not perfect in terms of execution. It may be great with storytelling and so forth, but I still feel like there were some things that were a bit rushed at the end. And considering the fact that this was kind of put out there as a one season story, they do end it a little bit too obviously in terms of leaving big questions left unanswered in terms of the wider universe. That said, though, they do take the story that they started with and give you an ending to it. There is that.
Okay. Both of these last two shows, it does make me wonder about as much as we have praised the cable shows and streaming shows, and of course it's now been filtering into the main network shows. This whole thing of doing shorter runs and not as many episodes or these little short seasons. While there is the argument that as opposed to having to do 20 plus episodes and have to deal with basically needing to have filler in there. I'm wondering if we're reaching the point where things are getting a little too tight. Because I know certainly Killjoys, I would have been, and I think it'd be, given the amount of stuff that they had been setting up over these two seasons, giving them 12 or 13 would have been nice, and perhaps something similar could have been the case with Stranger Things, where rather than doing an 8-episode intro or introductory story or whatever they want to term it, if they'd had a little. Do you think if they had at least a couple more episodes to flesh things out a bit, it would have helped?
I'm kind of back and forth on that. I think that for me, I would have liked there to have been a couple more episodes just to really dig into the world a little bit more. But at the same time, it could be one of those cases where it's just... maybe 8 episodes was enough, but they just needed to do things slightly differently to really punctuate the season. I feel like they came out with a very strong finale, but I also feel like there are it's a little too obvious that they were setting things up for future stuff.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Next on the list, also coming in at 8.25, The Last Ship, Season 3, Episode 12, Resistance. Chandler returns to America in a bid to find answers to what has truly been happening all along. Yes, that pretty much describes all of Season 3.
Yes.
As the Crusade comparisons continue.
He's just been taking the long way around the Ring of Fire. That's
that's it. Definitely setting the stage for a big confrontation with the powers that be here at the end of this season. I'm curious, with one episode left this season, do you feel like they're going to wrap up this whole thing with the coup in America, or is this really just the start of this storyline?
I would hope it's just the start. Although at the same time, if anything, I thought as much of it's it is absolutely in the DNA of this show. The ease with which they were able to turn the army and the general and some of the other military back around to their side seemed to me a little easy. While we haven't seen a lot of the groundwork that the regional leaders had been laying, I think I might have liked to have seen a little bit more pushback and people believing the big lie of Chandler being a traitor and we shouldn't give in. But at the same time, I also know that's really not what kind of show this is. So the relative ease with which he was able to flip. Flip this contingent, is in keeping with the story, which is my long roundabout way of saying, yes, I could see where they are perhaps leading this to a very quick resolution, but my hope would be that after the international hijinks and shenanigans of this season, I think it would be very interesting to really turn the focus back to what remains of the United States and go into more of a true civil war / rebellion sort of model.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. Let's see. That means that we are going to wrap up our episodic discussion with Dark Matters, Season 2, Episode 10, Take the Shot. Shipboard Mayhem sheds light on some of the crew members' dark pasts. And this is tied with The Fear of the Walking Dead at the bottom of the list with a 7.25. And, well, I liked the android hologram shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice highlight reel for Zoe Palmer.
Yes.
Any fans of hers, I'm sure, were happy about certain scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But
absolutely,
there's not a whole lot else to this episode that grabbed me.
I mean you gave it a 7.5, I gave it a 7. I think we probably were having similar reactions, but for me it was more that yes, I was enjoying the android stuff. The whole stuff with the various characters, and again I was hesitating because it's like, no, I can't remember which numbers they were. but these illusions popping up and taking them on these journeys, I was just finding to be clumsy and stilted and stuff I've seen before and done much better elsewhere. Especially that first one where it winds up with them getting run through and it's like, oh, okay, fine. So we know this one's not real. I found all of that just incredibly subpar, and it was just the Zoe Palmer and the android versus simulation stuff, and having to track down the virus was much more interesting, but was still weighed down by all of the hallucination stuff.
Yeah, and it was such a all that stuff, as you said, is such a stock sci-fi type storyline with the hallucinations and all of that, and we've seen shows do things like that so much better. It's been a while since I've seen the show, but I was just reminded over the past weekend or last weekend during the con of Farscape, and
yes.
I'm almost certain Farscape did something just like this. They did it so much better.
Hallucination episodes, body swap episodes, of course, but
yes,
yeah, but
But in general, these episodes can be fine. They can be fun. They can tell you a lot about a character. But yeah, again, these characters are just so poorly drawn, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's like hard to care. Or you know, it's I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's four, but this is the samurai. You know, this whole thing of, you know, him now, you know, now that he knows he's the heir to this, to this empire, except, you know, and he, you know, so he wants to get back to, you know, to being emperor when he feels ready. But the problem is we know so little about this empire he wants to go back and lead, you know, and still precious little about his family, beyond real broad brush stereotypes, which is all we've gotten so far.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they just really, I'm waiting and I'm still waiting and I think I'm always going to be waiting for them to give me enough detail, enough depth to these characters for me to differentiate them from each other and to care about their futures. To me, these are right now characters that are just kind of going through the motions.
Yeah.
Whatever that gets thrown in their way, they deal with, and that's about it. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm happy for that. There are a lot of people that love this show. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, I ran into them a week ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Dark Matter, you know, I mean, had a whole, you know, large presence and a track devoted to it at Dragon Con. So, you know.
Yes. No, I mean, so I know there are a lot of people that like this show. It's just like even they have to admit at a certain point that these characters remain a big question mark. All of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even like we have one or two characters that we can really sink our teeth into, and then you can bounce them knowing so much about themselves against these other characters that know less. They're all a big question mark.
Yeah.
And sooner or later, you really have to peel back those layers in a way that makes you want to know more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the problem. I at least don't want I really don't have this compelling need to know more about these characters.
No.
Things are just happening on this show. It's happening and it's fun when I'm watching it, but I don't really come away with this huge, you know, burning desire to know where it's all heading. It's just there right now. They would almost do better to get rid of any of the arc elements of the story and just, if they're going to go the way that they're going, up to this point, you know what? Just do episodic stuff. Don't worry about the arc stuff because it's not as interesting.
It certainly hasn't grabbed me yet.
Yeah. That's it though for the episodic discussion. That brings us pretty much up to date. And we're going to be able to dig into things a lot better or a lot more recent as we go forward. Back on our usual schedule, I should say. Sorry, got slightly distracted by a computer issue there. So we're back on track. We should be back on track with our normal schedule for recording and releasing things as of this week. And yeah, we are hopefully not going to have any major interruptions for about a month or so.
Yes.
So that would be nice. Yeah. But
although I can pretty much guarantee that we will be getting the final Dragon Con update from Gary, get his side of things when he comes back. And there was one or two things that I might have been holding off on discussing until we get Gary here. So
yeah. Oh, okay. I'm sure that we will continue to have those discussions for sure. All right. That's it for this week. Until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review. So let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.